Hey, good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 o'clock. Coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, musician Jesse W. Johnson is going to join us live in studio. We'll talk to him. He and his band Coyote Scream are playing at Quenchers tonight. And we'll tell you all about the show, and we'll hear some live music, and we'll talk with Jesse. Jim Ryan is going to join us after the 4 o'clock news to talk some music. And he recently interviewed Arsenio Hall and said it was the greatest interview he ever had. And then Esmeralda and I will play another round of Celebrity Name Game, all here on 720 WGN. So stay tuned, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. It is that time. It's time for our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Always tons of TV to talk about, and we welcome Dan to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much, Nick.
How are you?
I'm very good, and there's a lot of TV, and a lot of it's really, really good.
Yeah, let's start with wrapping up Feud, Betty and Joan series, and I thought the finale was great. I really did, and I thought it was handled beautifully. I thought it was heartbreaking, and of the two, I believe Jessica Lange is probably, if either of them are going to be getting Emmys, I think Jessica Lange's she's got it instead of Susan Sarandon.
I think that she has probably pulled ahead. I was going back and forth throughout the entire season, and I definitely think that if we leave with where the series left off, I think without any question, the finale went to Jessica Lange. The way that it treated Joan Crawford's sort of last year's tragic, but also a little bit weirdly funny with Trog, and yeah, it was hard to watch, and she was really pretty spectacular in the finale, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And I mean, it's just that, you know, in reality, Joan Crawford had a more tragic ending than Bette Davis did. So that's just, you know, par for the course. But I really thought, overall, I thought the show was great. I really did. I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I thought, you know, there were a couple of episodes in between the Oscars and the finale, and I think you agree with me on this, that were a little bit shaky. But I thought the finale brought it all back together, and I was very satisfied with the whole thing.
I agree. I wonder if they could have done the season as 6 episodes, basically. I think probably that the 2 episodes post-Oscars probably could have been condensed into 1. I think the episode before the Oscars probably could have been trimmed and maybe attached into the Oscars. I'm just trying to think of ways in which the story wouldn't have meandered in quite the way that it did after Baby Jane. But I think that that's what the story did. You know, there was a movie they tried to make that they couldn't make, and then everything just got sad. And as you say, Bette Davis had the reputation that she was able to keep for years. She kept being brought back to make appearances at the Oscars and all of that. And Joan Crawford ended sadly. And so I thought the series did a very good job of getting to that, and also of probably, hopefully, making audiences feel a little bit guilty if they took too much campy pleasure in the series as well. Because I think the show got to a kind of place of heart at the end, and the heart came from kind of the pain that we inflicted by giggling at them. So I hope that people got the sadness at the end.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a really wonderful scene in a bookstore where she wrote like an advice book, or she talked into a tape recorder and someone wrote the advice book. And she was at a book signing. Joan Crawford, I'm talking about, was at a book signing, and a fan comes up and gives her an 8x10 from Baby Jane to sign. And the exchange between the two of them, you know, about the campiness and all that stuff, I thought was really, really very telling. And I thought it was a great scene.
I thought it closed very, very well. I was impressed with how well the show tied together. I had been sort of in the past couple episodes kind of enjoying scenes of it, but maybe not necessarily feeling like it was holding together as a whole. But I thought the finale brought the show around in a neat way that I appreciated and approved of.
And I really loved the whole fantasy sequence at the dinner table, where they, you know, they talk to each other. It's a fan, you know, it's Joan Crawford having sort of just a fantasy vision about making amends with Bette Davis, and I thought that was a really wonderful scene too.
And that's the kind of thing that could fall flat if you didn't buy it, and I also bought it. I can understand why some people would feel like it was from a different show, and you know, if it didn't work for you, I don't begrudge that. It definitely worked for me, though.
Yeah, me too. All right, let's stay on FX then. I have not seen last night's episode of Fargo, but I have seen episode one of the new season. And how many have you seen?
I've only seen two so far. They are deep in production still, and they're deep in post-production still. And so FX is pretty much getting episodes within days of airing them. So I suspect that probably they will get episodes to critics a day or two before airing, and probably not much more than that, which is very different from past seasons where certainly the first season they had nearly the entire thing entirely locked by the time it started to air. I think we got six episodes before the premiere, and then the second season was a little bit further behind, but still they were a couple episodes ahead on critics screeners. But this one, it looks like it's going to be almost moment to moment. So
yeah.
This week's episode, the second one, is the last one I've seen so far.
The second episode is waiting for me, and it's the first thing I'm going to do when I get home after work is watch it. I thought the first episode was great. I really did. And first of all, tell everybody about what the concept for Fargo is. I mean, this is yet, you know, like Feud, it's another sort of anthology show.
It is, and it's all kind of based around, at this point, Noah Hawley's sense of quote-unquote Minnesota nice, as he describes it and as the Coens describe it. And the first two seasons were connected, even though they were set decades apart, they were connected by the core law enforcement family, the Salversons, and so the Allison Tolman character in the first season, and the Keith Carradine character, and then the Patrick Wilson character in the second season. And this season, at least thus far, is not connected in any way. It's set in 2010, and the conceit is, I guess Ewan McGregor is the star, and he plays brothers, Emmett and Ray. One is very successful, the other one is kind of a low life, even though he has Mary Elizabeth Winstead as his fiance, so he's obviously doing okay for himself in certain ways,
right.
And he's doing very well at bridge, so you know, you can only pity him so much. But yeah, and so in Fargo style, and spoiling absolutely nothing, unintended consequences lead to tragic, horrifying violence that's also very funny, and people are, and the body count is going to pile up because that's what Fargo does. And sometimes it piles up because people do bad things, and sometimes it's because good people do stupid things. And it's all very much tangentially of a piece with the Coen brothers movies, but it's really, at this point, it's what Noah Hawley makes it. And it's impressive how he's managed to make Fargo into its own wildly successful brand.
Yeah. All right, listen, Dan, we got to take a break here for the news. When we come back, I want to talk about the first episode and some of the performances and some of the things in Fargo, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, hang on a second. Dan Feinberg is with us as the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and he joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. When we come back after the news, we'll get into episode one of Fargo, and maybe he'll give us a little bit of preview of episode two. And we'll take a break right after this, the news. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran with your morning drive at 6. Not doing Triple Play Thursday this week because our show is jam-packed with guests. And coming up after 3:15, we'll be joined live in studio by singer-songwriter Jesse W. Johnson. He and his band Coyote Scream are playing at Quenchers tonight. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about music and hear some live songs. Our good friend Jim Ryan is going to jump in here a little bit later on, talk about music and talk about his encounter with Arsenio Hall. And then after 4:30, Esmeralda and I will clash in another celebrity name game. But right now we're talking to Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're talking TV. Particularly right now, we're talking Fargo on FX. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
So let's get your thoughts. What do you think of the first two episodes thus far?
I like it very much. I'm not sure necessarily that I love it yet. To me, I'm not sure if there's something just a little bit missing that I want in the heart department. Basically, I feel like I do miss the Salversons from the first season. I miss the inherent decency of the Alison Tolman and Colin Hanks characters in the first season, of the Patrick Wilson character in the second season, and I'm maybe missing that so far in the third season. It perhaps feels just a little bit more arch than the first two. On the other hand, everybody is so great, and the performances top to bottom are so much fun, and Noah Hawley directed and directed the pilot, the first episode, wrote both episodes. He's just got such a unique tone and set of rhythms, and I love listening to the way his characters talk. I love seeing his eye in these chilly, you know, environments that are really Calgary but are pretending to be North Dakota, etc. And so even if I'm feeling like this might be a small notch down from the first two seasons, that's not such a bad thing at all. And so, no, I've really enjoyed the first two episodes. Ewan McGregor is impressive, and he's having a lot of fun going back and forth between characters. Yeah. I think this could be the part that Mary Elizabeth Winstead has been sort of born to play that she hasn't gotten. I felt like she sort of has been this TV star in search of a TV star vehicle, and she's done all these things that have been just off. Some people kind of like Brain Dead on CBS. I did not. Mercy Street on PBS was okay. There was the remake of the French zombie show that they really just shouldn't have done at all. But this could be the part that she was born to play, as it were. And then this is totally just the spring of Carrie Coon. And between this and the last season of Leftovers, you'd be hard-pressed to find any actor in my memory who has ever had two regular roles on two shows of this quality going at the exact same time. It's remarkable seeing the work that she's doing between this and The Leftovers. People should know who Carrie Coon is, and I feel like not enough people do.
I agree with you. I've not seen The Leftovers, and I know that I should, but she's great on Fargo. She's absolutely great. I also want to mention how much fun it is to watch David Thewlis in this.
And in episode two, he's even more. Whatever he's doing, and I can't quite figure it out yet, whatever it is, it's insane, and it's going to be fun to watch. He's very good here. Michael Stuhlbarg is terrific. You know, he's getting to come back from Serious Man into the yeah. semi-Cohen world, yeah. And so that's a pleasure. No, so many people of so much talent.
Yeah, and you've got a couple of people who are who graduated from the Cohen brothers world. Because David Thewlis was in Lebowski, so they've all kind of, you know, all that stuff kind of blends together. I think it's great. The thing that I find amazing about it, Dan, is it really does it beautifully captures that very, very specific feel that the film had, that the Coen brothers had. It really captures that. It's not telling the same story or anything, but the tone and Noah Hawley really nails what the Coen brothers did with that movie. And it feels like it's part of that world. It really does. And that's a huge success.
I think it's sort of part of the same thematic universe. I think that it has tonal nods throughout and very literal nods throughout as well.
Yeah.
It's a great show. The first season was my number one show of the year it came out. The second season was my number two show of the year it came out. So this is a franchise anthology, whatever you want to call it, that I really love having. And it's amazing to me that as I look at what's currently on TV, it might be my third or fourth favorite thing that's on TV at this moment.
Yeah.
And that's a remarkable thing for just how much great stuff there is.
Yeah. All right. Let's tell me about. I saw the trailer for it. It's on Netflix, and I've not watched it yet. Or is it? I don't even know if it's streaming yet. But Girl Boss.
Girl Boss premiered last week.
Okay.
And so it is. It is there. It's 30 minutes sort of comedy. It's based on a memoir about a young woman who became wildly successful in the world of online vintage clothing selling or something to that effect. The show is not tremendously good, but I like Britt Robertson, who stars in it. I've liked her going back to Life Unexpected on the CW and a couple other shows that she did in a couple movies she was in. And Hollywood has not really known what to do with her either. You could make you could write a book about fine actresses who Hollywood does not know what to do with. And she's one, and it's a reasonably good part for her. I think that coming out at a different time, Girl Boss might be a show where I'd tell people, oh, you know, you should watch it. It's got some good moments and some not particularly great moments and whatever, but it's pleasant. There's just too much other good stuff that's on now for me to be recommending it. Mm-hmm. But there is one episode, the fourth episode. The show is set in 2006 that is based heavily around the season 3 finale of The OC, the episode in which Marissa Cooper dies. And spoiler for people who haven't watched the third season of The OC. Sorry about that.
It was only 11 years ago, so.
Yeah, I don't feel hugely bad about that, but yeah. So, but it's not just like a cheap joke about it. The characters are sitting watching that episode of The OC, and they're watching the entire thing play out. And then there are callbacks, multiple callbacks throughout the episode. I would tell people that they might want to check out the fourth episode because that is amusing enough, but only people who would be amused by an episode built around the third season finale. This is a very self-selecting audience. I understand. If that sounds like an amusing thing to you, you should totally check out the fourth episode of Girl Boss. If it doesn't sound like an amusing thing to you, you really probably shouldn't check out any of the episodes of Girl Boss. Okay. So
I'm torn because, yeah, I really, like you, I really like Britt Robertson a lot. And I agree with you that, you know, something, you know, she's mishandled completely as well. So I'm a little torn on this. I'll probably watch a little bit of it. If it's not, you know, if it doesn't grab me, I won't watch the rest of it.
Go ahead. To the fourth episode to get to the OC episode.
Yeah.
Make sure you get to that.
Okay. I will. Tell me about Kay Cannon, who created this.
She wrote Pitch Perfect and other things, and she seems to have a reasonably solid voice, and there are some moments of inspiration in the series. It's got a fairly good supporting cast. Dean Norris from Breaking Bad plays the main character's father, and it's sort of a pleasantly nice guy role for him. RuPaul is surprisingly effective as the main character's kind of somewhat wacky neighbor, but really gives good comic relief, like a good performance from RuPaul. I want to praise that. Who else? Melanie Lynskey pops up for a few episodes, and she's always great.
Yep.
You know, it's only three episodes that she's in, and that's in the second half of the season, and she's good. There are bits and pieces that kept me going. I watched all 13 episodes because Netflix sent out all 13 episodes before it premiered, and right. I didn't quit. But yeah, I think that there's so much good stuff, and
right.
You know, things that are only so-so, you can only get so enthusiastic.
Okay, all right. So that's Girl Boss on Netflix. So you've seen? Have you seen all the episodes of Genius?
I've only seen two episodes of Genius on National Geographic. That's another one where they're putting finishing touches on the episodes kind of moment by moment by moment. And so, yes, I watched the first two episodes. And for people who don't know, it is National Geographic's first scripted series project. It's another anthology series. The first season is going to be 10 episodes about Albert Einstein, and then the second season is going to be a different Genius. And we'll find out, apparently, in the finale, who the next genius will be, which might be funny. It stars Jeffrey Rush and Johnny Flynn as Albert Einstein at two different ages, and they are both very good. And that alone is probably a reason to watch if you're interested in the subject matter. It's not oppressively scientific and brainy. And so you should take that as either a good sign or a bad sign, depending on whether you would like for it to be oppressively scientific and brainy. It's a little bit, but not excessively. It's a lot about Einstein in love and Einstein as a man, in addition to Einstein as a great thinker. And it has good moments, and it's really very well performed throughout. I will definitely keep up with it again, so much TV.
How much is Ron Howard involved? Is he just executive producer?
He directed the pilot.
Oh, okay.
And it looks a little bit Ron Howard-y because there's a certain amount of beautiful mindness to it. Concepts magically visualized in places. It has a fair amount of polish, but Imagine produced the whole thing. So, and they're very involved as a company, and so I assume he was at least vaguely involved as a executive producer throughout. But yeah, he directed the pilot, but did not direct subsequent episodes.
Okay, all right. So that's genius. Oddly, on the National Geographic Channel, which is a little strange.
Everyone wants to be in the scripted TV biz. So there they are.
All right. Well, there you go. That's genius. And that's when is that on, by the way?
It premiered on Tuesday.
So Tuesday.
To go through the days in my head, yes.
Okay.
So it was when it premiered. And, you know, this might be one where you want to wait and watch three or four episodes all in a pile. That's how people like to watch their TV these days.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Okay. So that's genius on National Geographic. Okay. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're talking TV. He joins us every couple of weeks. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. All right, we'll take a break, come back, and we'll talk more TV with Dan. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Let's get back to the conversation with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
Okay, I want to talk about the two episodes that I watched of Great News, which debuted Tuesday night on NBC. And this is Tina Fey and Robert Carlock's new production. And tell everybody about it, and then we can talk about how you felt about it. I watched the first two episodes this morning.
I will be interested to hear what you thought about those. It's created by Tracy Wakefield, who worked on 30 Rock for a good portion of its run. She started off, I think, as an assistant, and then she ultimately ended up winning an Emmy for co-writing the finale with Tina Fey. And it's very, very 30 Rock-esque, right down to the basic plot, which is that a young news producer on a national news show out of Secaucus, New Jersey, her mother decides in her 60s to get an internship at the news station, and hilarious hijinks ensue. Rika Helin, who some people will know from Ground Floor or maybe Undateable or perhaps from Love, she plays the main character, Andrea Martin, who people will know from being Andrea Freakin' Martin, SCTV if you prefer, but, you know, legend Andrea Martin.
Yes.
Plays the mother, and other roles are played by such comic luminaries as John Michael Higgins and Horatio Sands, and of course, that luminary of luminaries, and I'm only somewhat being sarcastic because she's actually really totally funny on the show. Nicole Richie also stars as the co-anchor of the new show that the main character works on. So what did you think of Great News?
I was not crazy about the first two episodes. I was pretty disappointed. I found some of the performances. Well, Andrea Martin is she's a national treasure. So that just goes without saying. She can work anything. And I mean, the thing is, I thought the material, as you mentioned, I thought the material was very derivative of 30 Rock. And I can understand that considering who, you know, executive producer and who created it. I just didn't think it was particularly clever. I didn't laugh very much, but the cast is so good that I'll continue to watch it. I'm very surprised at how funny Nicole Richie is on it. She's really great on it. And she holds her own with some real comic heavyweights, you know? I was disappointed with the first two episodes. I didn't think it was great, but I will continue to watch it only because of the creative forces behind it and because it's a great cast.
I definitely agree that the pilot is not very good at all. The pilot, I thought, is kind of a mess. It suffers from kind of pilotitis. Everything is announcing who the characters are and announcing what the premise is and trying to make you buy it when, it's probably not necessary to work as hard as it does. I thought the second episode was appreciably better, and I thought the subsequent episodes were better still. I laughed a pretty fair amount. But I also don't think that I've seen 10 episodes of this. they sent out the entire first season. Mm-hmm. And I don't, it doesn't become consistent. Like, there's not a point at which I can tell you, okay, it locks in at episode six, and it's just smooth sailing from there. It doesn't get there. But I laughed a pretty fair amount consistently at it, even if I wasn't necessarily thinking that whole episodes were good. I was finding chunks to find very funny. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it ever becomes great, but I think it has still a lot of potential. Maybe I would have liked to have seen it become a bit more settled into that potential after 10 episodes, but, you know, comedies sometimes take a while. 30 Rock did not have a smooth pilot. It did not hit the ground sprinting. So yeah.
Neither did Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec took a while before it really gelled, you know?
Oh, conspicuously, Parks and Rec
yeah.
had a rough beginning.
Yes, it did.
You know, 30 Rock, I can still find things to laugh at in both the original pilot and the pilot that aired. But, yeah, it took time to find the characters and find the voices, and I suspect this one will as well. I think there's a lot of potential. I think that Tracy Whitfield is very talented. I think she's also very funny as an actress. I think there's a lot of talent on display here. It's not settled yet, and the question of if NBC is in any position to let a show like that develop and take, you know, the 20 episodes it might require to actually become very good. I don't know if NBC is in that mode yet.
Yeah. Does anybody know how it did? Did people watch it Tuesday night?
I did not pay attention, but I can't imagine that that many people watched it. And it's also, it's tough because, I don't know, you don't want your pilot to be bad. You want
yeah.
the pilot to be good. You
yeah.
want people to be able to tune in and watch the first episode and go, I want to watch the second. And so the fact that they're doubling up episodes of this like they did with Trial and Error, that's not necessarily the worst of ideas, because it maybe gave people the chance to watch that second episode and maybe to see that they liked it more. But I would have liked for it to be better, because shows don't get the chance in today's market
right.
to really find themselves, unfortunately.
Right.
And
yeah. I will say this. I do agree with you. The second episode was better, but I still am not totally on board with it. But like I said, I mean, you can't argue with this cast, and so I'm going to continue to watch it because, well, Andrea Martin's in it, and that's it. That's even just enough for me. So.
Yeah, well, she had a summer show on NBC about a family law firm like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of one of the, and did you watch all of that one too?
I did, and I love her on Difficult People. Absolutely love her on Difficult People. She's hilarious on that. So I love Andrea Martin. I love everybody who was ever a part of SCTV, for God's sake. I mean, you know.
I can endure. There's no reason not to love her and the entire cast of SCTV. I just simply don't remember what that NBC summer show was even called. And I don't
remember it either.
God, there were all sorts of weird things, because they also did the Sweden show with Amy Poehler's brother, and that was the same summer. That one, I think I at least remember, was called Welcome to Sweden. But yeah, that was not a show that lingers in people's memories or in my memory.
I'm looking at was it called Working the Engels?
Yes, because the family was they were the Engels.
That's it. That's
and, you know, look, I love a good show. I love a good last name parody. That for me will always be hilarious.
Right.
But yeah, that was okay. Not the best of pun days.
All right, cool. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
We got to take a break for the news, and when we come back, we're going to talk about The Handmaid's Tale. All right, Dan?
Excellent.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to take a break here. Dan Feinberg is with us, a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. We got the news, and when we come back, we're going to talk about one of the best new shows that you can watch. I mean, seriously, one of the best new shows that you can watch on. It's on Hulu, and we'll talk about that after the break in the news. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here till 5 o'clock Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. Coming up in just a few minutes, Jesse W. Johnson is going to be with me live in studio. We're going to talk about his upcoming gig tonight at Quenchers, and we'll hear some live music and talk music with Jesse. And then at 4 o'clock, speaking of music, our good friend Jim Ryan is going to join us, talk a little music reviews, and he had a wonderful time interviewing Arsenio Hall. We'll talk about that, and then Esmeralda and I will have another heated battle in celebrity name game. But right now we are talking about television with Dan Feinberg, who joins us every 2 weeks. He is a critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can read him at Hollywood Reporter, and you can also follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
All right. let's talk about The Handmaid's Tale. This is based on Margaret Atwood's incredible book, which I love, and it's on Hulu. Tell everybody about Handmaid's Tale, and then we can talk about it in detail. Hulu only released 3 episodes.
And they're going week by week from here on in.
It's kind of the half-bin format. That sucks. I didn't know that. I thought maybe they were going to go 3, 3, and 4. But no, man. I gotta wait a week between the episodes now? That sucks. All right, well, I've watched all 3, so I'm so disappointed. Tell everybody about The Handmaid's Tale, Dan.
Phew, now I've there's really nowhere for me to go. I've bottomed things out with just by telling you its release pattern. That's pretty bad. So, yes, as you say, it is based on the classic dystopian novel by Margaret Atwood, and it's set in a near future that feels disturbingly close and closer every day, neither here nor there, in which a totalitarian fundamentalist regime has basically enslaved all of the women because fertility rates have dropped dramatically, and the few fertile women are basically enslaved to wealthy couples and made to breed children is the word I was looking for there for them. And the main character is played by Elizabeth Moss, who everyone knows and loves, and she is basically the handmaiden, or basically indentured servant or slave, to the commander, played by Joseph Fiennes, and his wife, played by Yvonne Strahovski, and her best friend is another handmaiden, played by Alexis Bledel, a long, long, long way from Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
I've only seen the 3 episodes you've seen. They're Hulu made another pile available to critics the other day, and I just haven't had the chance to get to them, and I want to, but I also want to give them the time and thought they deserve, because the first 3 episodes are just great.
Yeah.
And they're just substantive, important television, but they're also disturbing and thrilling and kind of breathtaking and entertaining and weird and strange. I mean, it's speculative fiction, it's sci-fi, so if you like dystopian speculative fiction weirdness, there's all of that too. But it's also an incredibly political show. It's a powerfully feminist show, but it's also a show filled with just marvelous performances. Elizabeth Moss is long overdue to win an Emmy, and I have to believe that this is going to be the show that's going to win her the Emmy that she does not have yet.
Yeah.
So, she's remarkable, but just about everyone around her is great. I think this is Alexis Bledel at her very best, showing a different gear that I would not necessarily have known that she had from Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I like her on Gilmore Girls, but, you know.
And also, it's a little reunion for Elizabeth Moss and Alexis Bledel, a couple of Mad Men alumni.
Oh, yes, got it. They did both have unfortunate interactions with Keith Campbell, didn't they?
They did.
God, why isn't Vincent Kartheiser on The Handmaid's Tale?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well,
so Vincent Kartheiser is in Genius. So everything comes back around in this conversation. So you liked the first 3 episodes?
Oh, my God. Dan, that's an understatement. I just thought it was magnificent. I just loved it. And, you know, I watched all three, you know, back to back to back. And I just thought it was great. And I'm a, you know, like any sane person, I am a massive fan of Elizabeth Moss. I think she is just one of the best actresses on the planet. And I still think her performance in Queen of Earth is one of the best I've ever seen, ever. And everybody in this is just great and doing really remarkable stuff. And I was thrilled to see Alexis Bledel play a role like this, and she's great in it. And just the vision of it, the way it's shot, the production values of it, you know, just it's and I love the book, and they're doing a remarkable job being faithful to the tone of the book and what the book was about, even though they've updated it, you know, for like modern purposes. But it's just it's a great movie, and as you mentioned, or a great show, and as you mentioned, it is really timely and really political, and in great ways, in really great ways, reminds me of Children of Men. Obviously, you know, they're kind of linked in that regard, even to the even the font they use for the titles is like the Children of Men font. So and it's a good thing, and that's a really good thing. But I think it's great. And yes, I so hope Elizabeth Moss finally gets some recognition that she deserves and finally gets an Emmy. I think she is remarkable in it, and just I think she has one of the most expressive and beautiful faces, and you get to see a lot of that in this. Like, there's massive amounts of close-ups of just Elizabeth Moss acting, and I could watch that for hours.
And she also does remarkable things where she injects these little bits of humor, just like even sometimes just in the voiceover.
Yeah,
that it needs so desperately because it's such a dark piece, but it really is funny because she is extremely funny. And mm-hmm. I think it's amazing because Elizabeth Moss, you know, she has been nominated for 6 or 7 Emmys, I think, between Mad Men. I don't think she was nominated for any for West Wing, but, you know, she was good there in Top of the Lake, of course,
yep.
But she won a Golden Globe. But for all of that, I think that she's underrated somehow.
Oh, yeah. Actress. I agree.
And I think this is going to push her over the top. I definitely want to mention that the first 3 episodes were all directed by Reed Morano, who is a great young director, former cinematographer. She was the DP on a bunch of Sundance films. She was DP on Frozen River, Kill Your Darlings, and a few other Sundance films. And she's just got such a tremendous eye. And the visual stylization of this, the use of color, the use, as you mentioned, of close-ups, it's just such a well-directed yeah. series as well. You could watch episodes over and over again, seeing
yeah.
the smart ways that the camera is being used.
It's just beautiful. It's beautiful. It's beautifully crafted, beautifully directed, and just it's great on every level. And there are so many moments that you know that stayed with me from the first 3 episodes that I won't forget, and I'll go back and rewatch them. In terms of direction and acting, one of the standouts for me is the scene where they have convicted this rapist and bring him out like for punishment. And the way that is shot and edited and the way that the acting is particularly Elizabeth Moss in that scene, is just brutal and remarkable, you know?
It is a special show, and it is one of several special shows at the moment. When I last came on, I told you that April was going to be one of the best TV months ever,
yeah.
And I hope that people are watching a lot of good stuff because there has rarely been as much good stuff as there is right now.
All right. Well, what else did you want to mention that you think is great, so we can end again on a high note?
Sure. I mean, I mentioned The Leftovers,
yep.
And last week's episode of The Leftovers, the second of the season, was one of my favorite episodes they've ever done, and it's great. Americans always talk about The Americans.
Yep.
It's still great, and it's probably the 4th or 5th or 6th best show on TV at the moment, and that's amazing. Better Call Saul, the second episode of the season, I thought was maybe the best episode they've ever done, and maybe the best directed episode that they've ever done. That's amazing. The first 3 episodes of Veep, the new season,
yeah.
is terrific.
Yep. Silicon Valley came back. I saw the first episode of that. Loved it.
And I haven't even gotten to American Gods yet. And
I was going to ask you about that. I'm so curious about it.
There's been too much other stuff, and because my colleague Tim Goodman reviewed that one, I just had to do other things instead. And I'm looking forward to it, and I've heard very, very good things. So, if that turns out to be great as well, that's just something else. I've spent like the last 4 or 5 days watching documentaries about the 25th anniversary of the LA riots, because there are a bunch of those coming out. And John Ridley's documentary for ABC, which I think airs on Friday, is very good. It's verging on excellent. And several of the other ones are also very good, powerful pieces of storytelling about something that a lot of people have unfortunately forgotten about. I don't know if any of them are better when it comes to depicting LA and race than O.J. Made in America was.
Right.
In fact, I would say without hesitation, they aren't. But even still, there's a lot of good nonfiction stuff coming. There really is something for everybody at this point. Yeah. So make sure you're catching as much as you can.
Okay, lots of great stuff on TV, and you can read all about it at Hollywood Reporter and follow Dan at The Fine Print on both Facebook and Twitter, and that's F-I-E-N. Before we go, I want to mention you tweeted this. Margaret Atwood tweeting my Handmaid's Tale review is a nice thing that seems to have happened. That is outstanding, Dan.
I was very pleased.
Yeah.
It made me feel happy. And that was on the first day that the reviews came out. She might not have known that absolutely everybody was going to be that enthusiastic about but it made me quite pleased when it happened.
Well, you should be. That's pretty awesome. All right. Always a pleasure, Dan. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, okay?
Talk to you soon, then.
All right, buddy. Take care. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody. Lots of great TV. And for me, leading the pack of great television right now is Hulu's adaptation of The Handmaid's Tale, which is remarkable on every level. All right, we'll talk with Dan in a couple of weeks. So we'll take a break. When we come back, live in studio, Jesse W. Johnson is going to join us. We'll hear some music and talk about his gig tonight with his band Coyote Scream at Quenchers. That's coming up right after this.